Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We have Dr. Leo Trasande with us today. He's a pediatrician, a spouse, a dad, and he's also the author of Sicker, Fatter, Poorer, a new book that's out. So welcome, Leonardo. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to get you on the show. So how's your book doing?
Oh, I think it's going great. Glad to see we're getting the word out and that people are thinking about these important issues.
Yeah, it's fascinating that there's still people that don't know after these decades of the knowledge has been around for a while, but you're getting new research all the time on raising children, like in pediatrics, and what can we do as far as helping our little people and protecting them?
Well, the science really has gone leaps and bounds, especially over the past couple of decades. We used to think that molecules in our body that we use to signal function between organs were really robust and didn't respond to or have trouble when unless there were very high exposures or in rare circumstances. But now we know that low levels of these synthetic chemicals can scramble the basic orchestra that our body is, disrupting signals and contributing to disease and disability. We now know of about 1,000 chemicals, synthetic chemicals, that contribute as endocrine disruptors. And the evidence is strongest for four categories of chemicals. The flame retardants that inhibit thyroid hormone and contribute to effects on the brains of kids. They're in electronics, carpeting, and even certain furniture. Pesticides that are used in agriculture. Bisphenols, which are used in thermal paper receipts and can linings. And phthalates, which are used in cosmetics, personal care products, and even food packaging.
So that sounds pretty scary. What hopeful words do you have for us?
The great news here is that there are a lot of safe and simple steps that folks can take right now to reduce the chemical exposures of greatest concern. So even just opening the window and recirculating the air can get rid of a substantial amount of the persistent organic pollutant that accumulates in dust from these electronics and other materials. Simply avoiding canned food consumption can reduce your level of bisphenol exposure substantially. Watching the recycling number on the bottom of a plastic water bottle or whatever you're drinking can really be helpful, too. Phthalates are represented by the number 3. 3, 6, and 7 are the ones to avoid. Phthalates are known to mess with the male sex hormone in particular, and they also can disrupt metabolism. 6 is for styrene, which is a known carcinogen, and 7 are for bisphenols, which we can talk about later.
So, Leo, why are we still using them? Why are we having them created and put out into our environments when we know this?
Well, you would think that the environmental protection agencies in the U.S. and Canada would be all over these issues and protecting us, but the reality is we have more of a Swiss cheese framework when it comes to regulation. In the U.S., at least, the Food, Drug, and Administration has substantial oversight about the chemicals that are intentionally or unintentionally added to foods through the process. And unfortunately, the regulatory mindset still dates to the 1950s and 60s. It's quite antiquated, actually.
Mm. And when we're looking at our food and pesticides, has the pesticide thing changed much, or the only thing you can do is certified organic to know that your food is safe?
Well, here's where there's a lot of hope, and that is that organic food has become more and more expensive with time as more and more people are getting engaged in buying it. And that really puts pressure on the price margin, making it much more affordable. We're even seeing it now in the big box stores, whereas we didn't see that before. And there also are priority fruits and vegetables. We call it a dirty dozen, as they've described by Environmental Working Group. And that's an important thing to keep in mind because it's the pesticide that gets on certain leafy greens and vegetables, and those are the ones where you really got to watch out. Whereas something like an avocado can be more impermeable to the pesticide getting in. You don't eat that outer layer typically, and so it's less of an issue.
Okay, so there is still that dirty dozen, which are the highest pesticide carriers, and then there's some that you don't really need to buy certified organic on.
Yes, and obviously from an ecological perspective, you could further support organic by buying more, but those are the ones that you don't have to break the bank to buy and do the right thing and limit your exposure.
Mm-hmm. And does using farmers markets and buying locally help this whole thing?
Well, it does from the perspective of reducing air pollution. And here's the other thing, that you're seeing a lot of these farmers markets even carrying them, and you're seeing even in the United States, at least, the food stamp program actually paying for organic food. So this is something that is not just becoming a thing for the well-to-do or those who can afford it. This is something that we all can do.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And really, it costs us, disease costs our whole economy a lot of money if we're not well.
We say that policy produces exposures, exposures contribute to disease, and disease costs our economy. In the U.S. alone, we know that endocrine-disrupting chemicals cost the United States $340 billion each year, and the costs are likely to be similar in Canada as well. That's 2% of our gross domestic product.
So do you think industry will ever have to pay for what they put out there? Like when we come home with all the plastics and that, shouldn't they be somewhat responsible for taking it back and taking care of it so that it doesn't land in the landfills?
Well, we're seeing a lot of movement because these kind of cost numbers really change the conversation when it comes to regulation. Typically, we've had a one-sided argument that focuses on the cost to industry of the safer alternatives. But now we're seeing a more positive dialogue that's more balanced about what the benefits are to people of reducing these exposures and doing the right thing. But we're also seeing a lot of power of social movements in particular. So look at the whole BPA-free movement. That didn't grow out of substantial science. That really grew out of a litany of concerns that occurred in 2008, leading to the industry getting it out of baby bottles and sippy cups, and ultimately running to the FDA insisting on a ban because the change had occurred. More recently, you're seeing two major supermarket chains literally change their entire buffet food packaging, because a study found Teflon-like chemicals in the lining. Literally, you could see on Twitter or Facebook pictures of these packages being set aside to be returned to the producer and forcing the producer to change the ways that the material was made.
So it's our choices as we become more educated that can change everything.
We have a lot more power than we recognize with our pocketbooks and wallets, and these are exposures that occur in households, they occur in schools, they occur in subways, buses, and cars. And you'd be surprised how much influence you can have on employers and other entities to change the system. If a school system insists on chemicals that are safer as ingredients in their cleaning products, that can have a huge impact on a market share of a particular company and force them to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And what do you see as a pediatrician now, that the difference between now and maybe 50 years ago with pediatrics? Is the whole body types changing from the environmental changes?
Well, we've seen epidemic increases in chronic conditions that in which the endocrine system is directly involved. We're seeing increases in autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Obesity and diabetes are substantially on the rise. By the way, nothing I'm saying here minimizes the role of diet and physical activity in the roles of these epidemics. But the reality is synthetic chemicals are increasingly understood to be an important and preventable factor, which is much more amenable to change than the permanent changes in diet and lifestyle that are so hard to achieve.
Mm-hmm. So it's just those little things, training your children to make good choices right from early ages, or being a good example of good choices.
But this is something also that affects us all across the ages and stages of life, and it affects people who aren't interested in raising a family. We know that phthalates, for example, disrupt the function of the male sex hormone, which is important even for libido. We have studies suggesting that these chemicals contribute to prostate as well as breast cancer. And so the reality here is that in some cases, this can literally be a life and death issue. You hear a lot of discussion in the media these days about low T, and that's because low levels of testosterone are either a marker for or a predictor of later coronary artery disease. And the phthalates in particular, by inhibiting thyroid function, can contribute to that low T phenomenon, contributing to cardiovascular disease and even death. So in some cases, these endocrine-disrupting chemicals are literally a life and death matter.
And so, and those are coming from the plastics or from the electronics or just from the chemicals in the air? Where are they coming from?
The phthalates come from food packaging, from they're the polyvinyl kind of plastic, the ones with the recycling number 6.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, they're used as additives to make smells in lotions and cosmetics. And so looking at the label and avoiding phthalate or fragrance, which is a catch-all trade secret term that doesn't give you a lot of information about what's actually used in the material, is a good thing to do.
What do you think about microwaves?
Well, there's this whole notion of microwave-safe plastic, but the reality is that that's meant for gross warping or misshaping of the plastic in the microwave. The reality is that at a microscopic level, these plastic ingredients can leach into the food, ultimately contaminating the food and then us as humans.
Mm-hmm. So in our homes, it's best if we just reheat on the stove with slow cooking?
In our household, we literally, if something comes in a plastic container, we'll take it out and put it in glass and use that instead.
Okay. So it's okay to microwave, just don't put plastic in it.
That's one of way to avoid exposure. Also, avoiding machine washing plastic containers is important because the heat and harsh chemicals can erode the plastic protective layer.
Okay.
And obviously, if it's etched or scratched, it's time to throw it away.
So we're good to be using glass and clay and all those things that don't absorb.
That's a good, safe, and simple step to limit exposure of concern.
Mm-hmm. And is there, as a doctor, is there any way you would offer advice to help scavenge or clean up once our bodies have some of these phthalates and they're causing disruption to the hormones? How do you clean things up? Is it just changing your ways, or are there actually detoxes for this?
The best detox is to change your ways about exposing yourself to these chemicals in the first place. Any so-called detox methods can actually introduce more harm than good based on what we know currently. There are no proven ways to eliminate these exposures.
Okay. Dr. Leo Trasande, we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about your book, Sicker, Fatter, and Poorer. Be right back.